If I'm a 9-to-5-er, if you will, I don't play sports for a living, if you will, and I'm struggling with movement, I'm struggling with fitness, I'm struggling with self-image, but I just don't know where to start. I have to ask myself, well.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Insanity Inspired. On today's episode of the podcast, we have a quality human being, someone who has climbed the ranks in multiple areas of his life, but particularly in the sports realm, he's made quite a name for himself. This individual is a founder, a creator, a performance consultant, a coach, a keynote speaker, a motivator, a husband, and so much more. Mm. This guy is the cream of the crop when it comes to training professional athletes. And it's such a pleasure to welcome to the show today, Mr. Mike Guevara, also known as Coach Mike G, the founder of GBG Hoops. How are you today, sir?
Well, I tell you what, after that intro, I'm feeling pretty sensational right now. I don't know if I've ever been introduced like that ever before, and I've done quite a few podcasts, but I'm thankful and I'm grateful and I'm humbled to be here with you. Before we started recording, you were mentioning about what you've done. I'm just sitting here thinking like, man, who's interviewing who? Because I want to know about you more than talk about me, but maybe we'll get to that at another time. So thank you for having me.
Of course, man. It's a pleasure, and I definitely appreciate that feedback. I want to start off by talking about your journey, but you know, a question that I think would be very appropriate to start so the audience can get a feel for you is, what mission are you on?
The mission to serve. It's that simple. And I've realized that I was put here on this planet to do just that. Now, there are many mediums and platforms in which service can be executed. And I can remember as far as 11 years old, 12 years old, being in a martial arts class of some sort and having the natural knack to want to take the younger ranked belts underneath my wing and teach them and instruct them and help them. And I didn't know why, you know, I just felt like that was the right thing to do. And it felt good to do that, to help people, to help kids. And as, you know, you just kind of go through the life experience, you know, I played football, American football through pretty much my entire childhood all the way through college. And again, this consistent behavior and trait just kept showing up. I wanted to help anyone and everyone that was willing to accept my help, right? I wasn't trying to, you know, overstep boundaries or anything like that. I wasn't a know-it-all of any sort. However, I knew I wanted to help with receiver technique. I knew I wanted to help with weight room technique, even in high school. And then once the NFL kind of fizzled out and that dream was no longer something of pursuit, the natural direction for me was coaching. And coaching for me is, I think, the combination of how I was raised, the environments I was raised in, who I naturally am as a human, and as well as my underlying foundation of passion for performance training wrapped up in one. And through my 13-year career, I was able to do some really cool things and just notice that this service-based mission has been consistent throughout my entire career. And as I sit here with you today, going on year 14, I've worked with countless amazing individuals from all different disciplines of sport. But truthfully, I know that this is just the first mountain, if you will. The second mountain is truly serving my community, those who look like me, those who are underprivileged, and especially children in our society that are underprivileged, that really speak to my heart and soul. And that's the direction I'm going. That is my purpose. That is my why. And that's the reason why I work so hard now, is to get to that second mountain.
That's a very commendable mission for someone that has experienced a lot of what life has to offer. And what I mean by that is, you have this awesome background of, I would say the common theme and thread is grit. And in that, you're the son of a military veteran. You were training athletes and students in gyms and parks, and you go on to earn a full-time scholarship to play college football. You're this undersized receiver, and you have this moment where you realize, like, hey, you know, maybe pro football is not for me. And what I really take pride is, and where I really have, you know, my essence develop, is in helping other people achieve their maximum potential. And so you go on to take this internship at the Factory Training in Oakland, California, where you meet this top-ranked tennis player. She ends up bringing, I believe, Victoria Azarenka.
Correct.
And, you know, she brings you on tour with her full-time, but you pitched her in order for that to happen. Now, I'm curious, what was that pitch like?
The thing that a lot of people probably don't realize about this cool story is that she handpicked me out of a gym that was actually based in LA, not Oakland. I'm from Oakland, but it was actually in LA. And it was one of these situations where someone points at you and says, hey, how you doing? Come over here. And you kind of look. And then you look behind you and you're like, oh, you're talking to me. And it was exactly that. And I'm like, okay, so I know who you are. Everyone was talking about you before you came in. Mike G, keep your cool, you know. And what those who don't know the story must realize is that I'm somewhat new to the performance coaching field, maybe my second year working professionally as a performance coach. So I'm a rookie still. And the immense pressure that one could put on themselves to step up to the plate and take on the responsibility of caring for a top five WTA tennis player in the world is an understatement. And one of the things that I've always stood on, developed from being an athlete, developed from being always the only Asian person in all of my classes from middle school all the way through high school, is confidence. I had to develop a certain swagger, a certain confidence, and a certain resilience to believe in myself and anything that I've done. And at that moment, it was the perfect moment. I was 27 at the time, 26 years old at the time. She handpicked me. We had a conversation, and it's one of these questions that you always ask yourself in these types of moments. What do you got to lose? So essentially what happened was she says, you know, I'm going to give you 1 week. I'm going to give you 1 week to train me. And truthfully, if we mesh and if we click and I like what you're doing and my team likes what you're doing and I feel like we have a good rapport and chemistry, I think I'm going to ask you to become full time. And I'll tell you what, Jonathan, it took me 2 days. It took me 2 days to convince her that I was the right one for the job. And here I am traveling the world, training one of the top athletes in the world, eventually earning a number one world ranking, 2 gold medals, 2 Australian Opens. And I can honestly say now, personally, within my own heart and soul, that I've actually been number one in the world at something. And that's pretty freaking cool.
Man, I was getting the chills as you were talking. Because, like, you know, you bet on yourself. You had this opportunity. And the other thing that I want to ask you about is, before it escapes my mind, is how were you able to calm your nerves? You have this moment where you're like, all right, stay cool. So there's some self-talk going on over there. But from a mindset perspective, you have this premier athlete asking you to effectively prove yourself with not much of a track record under your belt, right? Respectfully at the time. Now, obviously, 14 years later, it's a bit different. But at the time, how are you able to get into the headspace where you know that you can add value to a player or athlete of that caliber even without that experience?
This is one of these moments in my life where everything kind of slowed down. And I don't know if I'm sure you've experienced that, where you just find zone. in your 50-mile runs and, you know, these, you know, hyperhuman challenges that you've taken on in your career and just experiencing life in a whole different light, which I would love to talk to you about in another conversation. However, everything kind of slows down and you think about your principles, you think about your foundation, you think about fundamentals. It's very similar to just being an athlete. You know, you're put in high pressure situations in sport throughout your career. And again, I've been playing football since seventh grade, right? So being in high pressure situations as an athlete has been something, you know, that I've been exposed to. So you relate that to that and you start to recognize these types of emotions and feelings, but also you understand that you have a community that you can rely on. And it wasn't one of these things where she was like, okay, let's work out. Come on. No. I got to actually prepare for the session. So I went to my mentor. I wrote out a program and I ran it through him. I ran it by him. And he said, he looked at me, he says, Mike, this is perfect, because we were brought up on play and on creating fun in an experience for a workout. That's a very underlying philosophy and foundation that I've been exposed to and made a very prominent point in our sessions. And that's exactly what I did. I essentially took Victoria Azarenka through a session that had a fundamental component of play, whether it's a tag component, whether it's a catching component, whether it's a dodging component, all things that make athletes become athletes subconsciously. And this is the component of training that I feel a lot of gain or exposure could be had for us as professionals, is that exploring the avenue of play gets your athletes to enter a mental space that no longer feels like work. And when you can take an athlete into a workout or a training session, make it difficult, but make it fun. Now, all of a sudden, it doesn't feel like a grueling training session. It feels like a play session. And that's essentially what I did. She loved it. She understood how these different drills of play could translate to the tennis court. And I feel like that's what allowed me to slow time down and execute my session to excellence.
Now, the other interesting aspect about it is you mentioned excellence, you know, greatness breeds greatness. There's another theme, right, of just paramount champion mindset mentality. Being exposed to that level of preparation, dedication, skill, and like you were saying, being number one, what were some of the takeaways that stay with you having been through that at such an early stage in your career?
Ton of takeaways from being able to experience these moments of working with such high level individuals in such a prestigious sport. And one of the things that I always reflect on is open-mindedness, because here I am, a rookie performance coach who've mainly dealt with NFL football and NBA basketball, and then high school level athletes, whether it's soccer, tennis, baseball, etc. But I've never really worked with anyone from the professional tennis environment, nor do I understand how this works. So having an open mind and paying attention, saying little and listening all the time was a strategy that I took with me, because I was in such a different environment, from the language barrier to the different countries I was exposed to the different culture of what tennis actually is, to understanding that it's probably the only sport in the world that has three different playing surfaces. You just have all these, which obviously affect completely how an athlete moves based off of the ball trajectory, how fast it spins off the surface, etc., right? A lot of different cool components that people rarely think about who aren't in the tennis space. And, you know, I had the pleasure of working with her coach, who was in charge of all the tennis strategy and technical expertise. His name was Sam Sumik, and you know, he was a Frenchman, and obviously we didn't see eye to eye on certain things. Just that's just based off of sheer cultural difference. But removing my own ego, remaining open to his feedback, was something that has allowed me to grow immensely to this day. You know, here comes this 26, 27-year-old American ex-football player who thinks he got it all figured out. And Mr. Sam Sumik, Coach Sam Sumik, is like, Mike, slow down. You know nothing about the sport. I appreciate your enthusiasm, but have a seat. You know what I mean? So, you know, I really appreciate him for helping me grow in that aspect, because ego will really be the destruction before the success if you allow it to. And I'm not sure if it almost did for me, but I knew that I had to check it at the front door, and I did, and it allowed me to grow. So to answer your question, just being able to obtain a level of open-mindedness has been something that I carry with me to this day. And sometimes at the end of the day, even though I am talking a lot right now, I just listen. I sit back, pay attention, watch and listen, because you can't talk and listen at the same time. It's physically impossible. So less of this and more of this.
Well, what's interesting about it, as you talk about having the open mind, is you also, again, with another common theme of betting on yourself, after a certain period of time with Victoria Azarenka, you go on and start your own business, your own venture. And there was this inflection point where, correct me if I'm wrong, this is based on my due diligence and research,
which I very much so appreciate.
Of course. Which you decline a full-time position to work exclusively for an NBA athlete to build your own facility and training application. What were some of the points that you were wrestling with when you made that decision? And what was the tipping point in which you realized, okay, I'm going to lean in, do me, bet on myself, and see what happens?
Beautiful question. First and foremost, let me just do my own due diligence and shout out Vika Azarenka. Thank you so much for allowing me to be a part of that journey. I rarely get a public platform to do that. Secondly, shout out to Drew Holiday for giving me this path, this fork in the road, rather, because it was him who presented this opportunity to be able to become and continue the full-time venture that I had with him in Milwaukee, in which he won an NBA championship without me. I'm still sour over that. I'm still sick over that. But anyways, I always give him a hard time, like, man, how are you going to win the NBA championship without me? But there are many reasons as to why betting on myself, or betting on ourself, really is the proper way to put it, came to fruition. And the reason why I say ourself is, at this point, I'm married to my beautiful wife and my partner, Hadiah. And she was a heavy influence on this decision, naturally, because families comes first. That's no ifs, ands, buts about it. Like, every decision at this point we make, it's a we decision. So if we're going to Milwaukee, it's a we discussion. If we're staying in LA and betting on ourselves, it's a we discussion. And that's essentially what happened. We weighed out the pros and cons, literally, old school style, whiteboard, pros, cons. And it, at the end of that exercise, it just made sense to both of us that betting on ourselves, working on the brand that you see on my hat and on my shirt, and really stepping out into a level of discomfort that I haven't ever felt, which was, now what, was the right decision, believe it or not. So we decided to stay in LA. You know, I had a very difficult conversation with Drew Holiday and Lauren, his wife, just letting them know, like, look, man, I as much as I am going to miss you guys and want to work with you guys and also basically start from scratch, I'm going to generously decline this opportunity and stay in LA and figure it out with Hidayah. And that's exactly what I did. That's exactly what we did. We birthed the performance basketball app, Greatness Breeds Greatness Hoops, or GBG Hoops, which has 600 subscribers now as we speak. We were able to take on over 20 NBA athletes from the 2020 NBA season up until now. And it was just a whirlwind of an experience to literally step out in a isolated island with my wife and I and grow this thing from the ground up. Now, I'll never say that we did it on our own because we've had a lot of help along the way. And I always give credit to that and understand that and pay it forward. However, it was a very nerve-wracking decision to make to literally start from scratch, go from a salary, a monthly salary to literally $0 and do it all over again. But hindsight's 2020, looking back on it, obviously it was the right decision to make.
Now, in that experience, and you pointed out a few things there, Drew Holiday is one of the few athletes that, or many athletes that you've worked with. And again, this common theme of ascension, all the athletes that you work with tend to go in an upward trajectory. Fred VanVleet, Rondo, Dinwiddie, AD, Jalen Green, Duncan Robinson. I'm focusing on the NBA because I'm more of an NBA driven dude, but that's a separate discussion. What is your training philosophy, if you will?
Training philosophy, in a nutshell, could be broken down into providing an environment and experience that is catered specifically to the athlete's overall needs based off of demand in sport and position. So that's a very umbrella way of saying I'm going to train my guys or gals based off of what they need. And the reason why it's so general is because I don't attach myself to one specific method or tool or training concept or idea, as some of my fellow coaches do, which is, hey, there's multiple ways to skin a cat. You know, if you're the kettlebell guy, you're the kettlebell guy. If you're the Viper girl, you're the Viper girl. And hey, if it works for you, more power to you. But I'm not attaching myself to any one thing because I'm going to take the path that I feel like this athlete needs based off of the environment that I can create for him or her. And a lot of that has to do with the personality that they bring to the table, their injury history, what they love in the weight room, what they hate in the weight room, my experience with them, their training age, basically how much experience they have in the weight room. How do I connect with this person? All of these soft skills in conjunction with hard skills create this gumbo of how I approach each individual athlete, which is somewhat of a cop-out of not explaining how I train people. But for me, that's the best answer because that's really how I look at working with individuals. It would be a crime for me to say that, Jonathan, I'm going to train you the way I train Rondo, because you guys are two totally different people. You have two totally different histories and your personalities are completely different. So I like to make sure that I understand the human before I put them into the rigors of training so that I can match the square peg to the square hole, if you will. And I think that it's super important. And, you know, we don't get into these huge groups that you might see or you might feel is necessary, or those out there might feel is necessary, because you can miss a lot when you have bigger groups. So, you know, we keep our groups to 1 to 3 guys, and I'm able to put those groups in a fashion in which the goals are somewhat similar and the levels of training are somewhat similar. So, you know, for instance, Drew and Caris LeVert have similar training experience, so they can work out together. But I would never put Drew with Jalen because Jalen and I just started working. So Drew's now waiting on Jalen. Not to take anything away from Jalen, because Jalen's a freakishly gifted athlete, but it's training experience. Drew knows what I'm going to say before I say it. Jalen is still repeating, wait, say that again? So it's different, right? Like, we have to understand that these small little details matter. And I try my best to hit those marks day in and day out. And I think that's why we're able to create this upward trajectory once we're exposing our principles and methods to our athletes.
There's a great saying, I think it was Emerson, teach a man principles, he can create his own methods. And with and
bars
with that framework that you outlined at the top, right, this customization element that you offer your athletes and the people that you work with, I feel like that's so important, because in my view, I'm sure yours as well, everyone is an athlete, right? They don't necessarily treat themselves as such, but like everyone should be an athlete. And you know, when we customize our training plans around what's best suited for us, what works for you may not work for me, and vice versa, it's eye-opening, because now we can learn how to play to our strengths, identify our weaknesses, develop those weaknesses. And strength training is a great metaphor for life. And I saw this the other day where, you know, you pray for strength, but you got to expect resistance if that's the case, right? Because if you want to get stronger, like, there's going to be something that has to make you stronger, and you'll have to have some form of an experience or a progressive 100%. Overload. Sometimes it's just the weight gets too heavy, right? Like, you shouldn't just go pick up the 100-pound dumbbell. You should kind of warm up. But sometimes a 100-pound dumbbell is just going to come on you even when you don't ask for it.
Yes,
but
sir.
Training in general just helps us stay prepared. And so on that note of preparedness, I'm curious from your perspective. I know you work with a lot of high performers, but you know, for the general population, maybe, is there a way that people can maybe figure out what they are training for? How do they know what the best program is for them? How can they kind of know how to customize their own lifestyle choices, if that makes sense?
Hell yeah, 100%. And I love this question, because these are the types of questions we need to start asking to provide solutions for people. High performers are amazing, but they get paid a lot of money to prepare this way, which has that natural extrinsic motivation, if you will. However, if I'm a regular person, air quotes attached to regular person, a 9-to-5er, if you will, I don't play sports for a living, if you will, I have to ask myself, and I'm struggling with movement, I'm struggling with fitness, I'm struggling with self-image, but I just don't know where to start. I have to ask myself, well.
This episode is brought to you by Slate Milk. Slate Milk is a protein chocolate drink that gives you all the necessary energy after you have finished a hard training session, or also serves as an awesome snack, whether it's hot or cold. I commute 2 hours a day to my job, and every single day after I train, I'm looking for a quick snack or post-workout drink that I don't have to spend time making. So I go into my fridge, I take out my Slate, and I hit the road as fast as I can and enjoy my drink on the way to work. That's the way that I personally like to enjoy it, because there's so many different flavors. So in the morning, the mocha flavor with the caffeine definitely hits. I can also recommend you check out their other flavors. It is a phenomenal brand. They are the number one partner of the UFC. You can actually go to their website, slatemilk.com, type in the code INSPIRED for 10% off your first order. So go ahead, type in the code INSPIRED at slatemilk.com to get 10% off your first order today. This episode is brought to you by ProMix. ProMix is an energy supplement brand that provides a whole plethora of different products, from protein cereal bars to protein shakes, probiotic, prebiotic, deep load products, along with electrolytes, and the list goes on. ProMix is the supplement that I go to for all
of my health needs. It has been a game changer for me over the last few months. After the 1,000 pull-up challenge, my immune system was compromised in ways that were super uncomfortable. I kept getting sick, and I knew I needed to level up my game. I didn't place enough value on supplements, but I do now. I spent some time, I did my research, and ProMix is the brand that I decided to work with because my immune system is finally in check. So go check out ProMix.com and type in the code InsideTheInspired to get 20% off your first order today. That's right. Go to ProMix.com to get 20% off your first order today with the code InsideTheInspired.
What do I value? What are my values as it pertains to this transition, this transformation that I'm trying to induce upon myself? Because the value piece is something that's going to dictate a lot of solution-based driven answers. And what I mean by that is this. If I ask myself, why do I need to work out? And the answer is, well, I want to look good. Okay, you want to look good. And if we're speaking from general stances, I want a six pack, or I want some muscular tone or definition, more of the aesthetic component. All right, cool. Well, you understand that that's going to take some resistance training. In order to grow a muscle, you got to stimulate it with external resistance. Boom. So now I can start to reverse engineer a program based off of value, aesthetics. Let's say for a gentleman. I mean, in this age when you can literally put into ChatGPT, artificial intelligence, I am a 39-year-old male who's 5'8", 165 pounds. I have 12% body fat. I want to drop down to 10% and gain 12 pounds of lean muscle mass. It will literally, in 6 weeks, it will literally spit out a six-week program. Oh, and I forgot to say in the prompt, I can only work out 3 days a week for 60 minutes. Boom. It'll spit something out for you in probably 25 seconds. And I've actually done this, and the program is solid. So the ChatGPT piece is just symbolism of information being so readily available for free on the internet through AI, etc. So now I can guide people into these ventures based off of their resources. Do they have the affordance to pay for a trainer, to pay for a gym membership, to XYZ buy equipment, right? You know, these are the types of problem solving strategies that we have with this type of value. Let's move on to somebody else. Okay, I don't really care too much about my aesthetic piece. I just want to feel better. My body doesn't feel good. I have pain in the morning, whatever. I don't feel good in my body. I just want to move. Now I start to transition the question into, there are many forms of movement. What type of movement makes you smile? Oh my gosh, Mike, I love to dance. Now, immediately my brain goes to, what are the different types of movement modalities that involve rhythm, timing, and music? And forgive me for my ignorance, but if we went to a salsa class 3 times a week, we're moving, we're having fun, we're checking that box. I guarantee you're going to start to feel better. And there's so many more benefits from just that based off of social health, psychological health, etc. I want something a little more intense. I want to sweat. You can go to fitness classes where you have to coordinate some type of stepping action on a step through, you know, with a beat. It's almost a choreographed dance with, you know, the resistance of your body and stepping up on a box. And, you know, these are just two examples of just trying to figure out how to match the value of the individual to what they enjoy. And that's the purpose. We need to figure out things that matter to us based off of what we love and what we enjoy. And that's that play principle. In my perfect workout week, I'm telling you right now, Jonathan, I'm playing basketball twice a week. I'm playing tennis with my wife once a week. I'm lifting weights twice a week, and I'm playing flag football once a week. That is like the perfect workout regimen for me. And as you notice, there's only two times a week where I'm actually doing structured training. Everything else is straight play because I love to play. And that would be my perfect workout week, day in and out. Now, one day I will get there. Just right now, time and responsibility won't allow me to. But, you know, you run into these venture capitalists who literally have all the time in the world, and that's what they do day in and day out. They just go play. They play paddle pickleball. They play tennis. They play basketball. They play, you know, whatever it is. And you know, that's the true meaning of my value. So we just have to figure out, what do you value? And then let's match that strategy to your value.
I love how you started and finished with the same premise of identifying your values. I feel like, and this is something I've been talking about a lot recently when it comes to like motivations and purpose, like values are your compass and your motivations are like your roadmap. Because when you understand what motivates you, like, you'll be able to make better decisions. When you understand your values, those are literally the pillars of what helps you make effective decisions. If you don't have a value on health, you'll never be able to get the six pack. You'll never be able to lower your cholesterol. You'll never be able to be in the best possible shape for your family. And having that foundation, the values that you outlined, is just, I needed to zoom in and double click on it, because I feel like that's not talked enough about. And hearing it from someone who's training people at the highest levels, it's easy to see why you are able to get there. So my next question, kind of going back to the mindset aspect, is, you know, you've trained Olympians, you've trained professional athletes. What is the difference in, or maybe you could outline some of the key points that you've noticed in working with Olympians versus maybe professional athletes? What is the Olympian mindset? What is it about the Olympian mindset that stands out to you relative to professional athletes?
Culture is a huge part of how training affects the psychology of the different types of athletes. Case in point, football. Training off the football field is a part of our culture. We eat, drink, sleep, and use the restroom training. It is the foundation of football. And maybe I'm misquoting, but I believe the field of strength and conditioning was birthed from American football. Not taken away from the Russian scientists who used to create the best programs for their Olympians back in the 50s and 60s, but I'm talking about in America as a actual position for teams, strength and conditioning coach. I believe that that was birthed because of American football. And that point is driven hard home because culture has a huge emphasis and effect on how these athletes come in and their mindset in which they train with. So I don't ever have to motivate football players to train hard, ever. They come in, they gamify training in their mind themselves, and they compete at training every single session. I'm talking about, you know, if you're a good trainer, you're going to find that component and you're going to push that button over and over again because you're getting output. And you're getting output close to game-like intensity. And whenever you can get close to game-like intensity, you're going to be doing a lot of good adaptation. So if we're doing cone drills, they're competing. If we're doing push-ups, they're competing. If we're doing conditioning drills, they're competing. And that's not based off of me saying, hey, guys, it's a race. No. They naturally want to compete in every single endeavor in the training environment because that's just who we are. On the flip side of that, basketball players, it's not really a part of our culture. It's not really a part of their upbringing. I can remember lifting weights as early as eighth grade for football. most basketball players that I deal with don't pick up a weight seriously until 20 years old. So sometimes I'll get a rookie come in at when I was an NBA strength coach. I'll get a rookie come in at 19, 20 years old and have zero training age. They don't know how to squat, hinge, row. They don't know how to do anything that's fundamental in the weight room at 20 years old. Whereas an NFL football player at 21 years old, they're like completely competent in all of those movements because they've been doing it since they were 14. So to get to your question, Olympians, these are a different type of breed, even beyond football, because training is their sport. They have 4 years to train for literally 10 seconds if you're talking about a 100-meter sprinter, 9 seconds if you're in the Olympics. Think about that. Let's really unpack that and break that down. I'm training 4 years of my life for 9 seconds. That gives me a chill because the amount of discipline, grit, trust, psychological fortitude, and XYZ to be able to stay locked in and do the same thing over and over again for 4 years for 9 seconds is unbelievable. Someone needs to write a book about that. And comparing that to an NBA basketball player who all they want to do is hoop. That's literally all they want to do. Mike, I'm training with you because I know that it's necessary. I know it's going to keep me healthy, and that's important to me. And if I want to get this big contract, I have to be healthy. And I hate being in pain because if I'm in pain, I can't play well. Then versus I'm going to train with you for 4 years because I got a 9-second race that I got to run. It's a little different. So the culture, the mindset, and the approach is completely different. And I'm deducing that down to just one 9-second race. Obviously, they do world championships and other events, you know, but for the big payoff, it's that 9-second race in the Olympics, 100-meter final is what we're really after.
Culture is what you just outlined, right? So let's just double down on it real quick. What's the culture that you're building and have built through GBG Hoops and your training application for the audience?
I'm literally repeating this sentiment over and over and over again. Change the culture. Change the culture, change the culture. I have positioned myself strategically in the basketball space based off of abundance. Not because it's my favorite sport, not because it's where I wanted to go, but because God put me in that path. And now I'm just owning my path. I'm standing tall in my path. And that culture that we just spoke of about basketball, about guys that all they want to do is hoop and kind of just check a box. That is my mission, to change the culture. And surface level, when you get 10 to 15 NBA basketball athletes in a summertime starting to lift NFL numbers, back squat NFL numbers, do things that I've only witnessed from NFL football players, to be able to document that and share that with the grace of their permission and show high school basketball players, college basketball players, other NBA pro basketball players, like, look, this is what it takes. You see these people. You see the Drew Holidays and the Spencer Dinwiddies and the Mike James and the Fred VanVleet, and you see what they're doing and what they're capable of. And it's not by accident. And that's been a mission of mine ever since I stepped into this arena, dating back when I was with the Pelicans, seeing the culture there, seeing how people were just box checkers, seeing how the work could just be more quality, lit a fire under me and gave me a completely different understanding of how I can create a completely different culture in the basketball space. And that's what greatness breeds. Greatness is all about. When I bring a certain energy, attitude, and effort into your space and environment, you are going to get a reaction. And it's usually going to be a positive one. And that positive reaction is going to reflect right back onto me. And we're just going to feed each other. And that's what GBG is all about.
Mike, I've had an awesome time here today. There's a question that I posed to all my guests that I'm not going to pose to you. If the future version of yourself from 10 years from now were to fly in, and assuming he's in that ideal spot, if he were to fly in and offer you some advice in order to get there, what do you think he would say to you?
Oh, man, just continue to lead with trust and love, man. And that's a transition that I've been slowly but surely trying to make within my own well-being and presence, my application into the life experience. You know, we are calloused by our own life experiences. We're made who we are by what we struggle through. And everybody has a story and everybody has their own personal struggles, which create this armor. And what I'm starting to realize and find out is that that armor will limit you. It'll rob you from experience. It'll rob you from relationships and learning and understanding. And I'm slowly starting to get into this very even keeled space of just leading with love and trust and allowing what will be.
This has been awesome. Please let the audience know where they can keep up with your journey.
Audience, thank you so very much for listening and tuning in. If you want more of Coach Mike G and Greatness Breeds Greatness, tap into gbghoops.com. There you can find a bunch of resource on information on our app if you're a basketball player, or if you're just someone that wants to do some really cool workouts, go to YouTube, GBG Hoops, Instagram, gbg.hoops. We're on all those platforms. Check us out. DM us. Reach out. I'm always trying to respond and provide value. Greatness breeds greatness.
And of course, your handle, Mr. Do It Moving. Can't miss that because he's a great follow. You see some really cool unilateral isometric movements, developing athleticism. And yeah, honestly, it's been really cool to see the journey. Really awesome to sit down and talk to you, get to know you a bit, and tap into what it takes to be a champion, number one in the world. And just
yes,
wishing you the best, man. Look forward to connecting in person at some point.
Yes.
And have an awesome time in Monaco, man.
100%, man. I definitely want to do it in person. And part two is going to be even better. Hopefully, I'll get to lease with a couple questions.
I look forward to it, man. Thank you.
Thank you so much, sir.